I'm the operator with my pocket cash. And welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, here on WCOM LP Chapel Hill in Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle area, one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. We welcome your comments or questions via email at radioinvivo@earthlink.net, and there is a website for the program, which you can find at home.earthlink.net/radioinvivo. You can get on there and access all of our past programs. And after nearly a year and a half of doing the show, it's now quite an extensive archive on a wide variety of topics we've featured here on the show. So please check it out. And Radio In Vivo is also available as a podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is go to the iTunes site, search Radio In Vivo, and you'll get right to the podcast site. And, of course, we've always had podcasts available on the station's website as well at communityradio.coop. I want to mention that Radio In Vivo and WCOM have benefited from the support of the multi-talented Claudio Oswald Niedvorak. Claudio is a master storyteller and a performing poet and author. And Claudio is now also the latest addition to the roster of DJs here at WCOM. He and musician-composer John Paul McClellan co-host a show called Claudio's Speakeasy here on the station on Tuesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. So please give them a listen and check out Claudio's website at www.claudioarts.com. And Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the CIIT Centers for Health Research in Research Triangle Park. CIIT is a renowned leader in environmental health sciences research and education. For more than 25 years, CIIT has contributed science that guides sound regulatory decisions and protects the health of the public. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank CIIT for its support. And Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center in Durham. NESENT is a collaborative effort of Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University, and it is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. NESENT's mission is to facilitate broadly synthetic research to address fundamental questions in evolutionary biology by providing an environment for fertile interactions among scientists. Radio In Vivo and WCOM thank NESENT for its support. Well, this week on Radio In Vivo, I am honored to welcome not only a distinguished scientist, but the leader of one of the most distinguished scientific societies in the world. I speak, of course, of Sigma Xi, the Scientific Research Society, which has its headquarters right here in the Triangle in a marvelous building out in Research Triangle Park. It's a pretty breathtaking sight to walk down the hall next to the lobby and see a huge wall full of plaques honoring the many Nobel laureates who have been Sigma Xi members. And I'm proud to report that many of the guests I've had here on Radio In Vivo over the past year and a half have been Sigma Xi members, including Dr. Stuart Pym from Duke University, who was the 2007 winner of the William Proctor Prize for Scientific Achievement from Sigma Xi, one of the society's highest honors. I don't know if his appearance on the show put him over the top for that, but you never know. And Dr. Philip Carter is my guest today on Radio In Vivo. And Dr. Carter is executive director of Sigma Xi, which has more than 60,000 scientist and engineer members in 500 chapters at academic institutions, government laboratories, and industry research centers. Phil came to his leadership role in Sigma Xi in 2006 after many years at North Carolina State University, where he still holds the position of Professor Emeritus of Microbiology and Immunology. He earned his B.S. and Ph.D. from Notre Dame, and at various times in his career, he has worked at Oxford University, the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana, in private industry and with his expertise in microbial agents in a consultative capacity for the U.S. military on infectious disease. Dr. Phil Carter, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Radio In Vivo.
Thanks, Ernie.
Phil, there's a great deal to talk about when it comes to SigmaZy, but I'd like to orient our listeners a little bit first, because folks who aren't in the science community may not be familiar with the fact that we have this headquarters of this very venerable and prestigious organization right here in the Triangle. Can you give us just a quick thumbnail sketch of SigmaZy?
SigmaZy was founded at Cornell University in 1886. The organization is therefore 121 years old this year. It's actually a year older than NC State University, which was founded March 7th, 1887.
Mm-hmm.
The organization was founded really by a group of undergraduate students and junior faculty members in the sciences and engineering as a counter to Phi Beta Kappa, the Honor Society for the Humanities. It turns out that Phi Beta Kappa wouldn't recognize people in a science or engineering curriculum that didn't have a certain amount of liberal arts courses. So for that reason, these students and faculty members started an organization similar to Phi Beta Kappa, that is an honor society to cultivate interactions among the students and among the faculty members who joined or were inducted in order to, give support to one another and that sort of thing. It so happened that in 1888, just 2 years later, the first women were elected. There were five women inducted as members. So that plays really to Cornell's historic commitment to the higher education of women. I believe it was the first Ivy League university that admitted women, and they did it right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
The organization, unlike Phi Beta Kappa, which is primarily focused on inducting undergraduates who've attained a certain distinction in terms of their grade point average, Sigma Xi focuses on creativity and the ability to do research. We have a couple of levels of membership. Associate members are inducted usually as students who are nominated based on their potential for research. Mm-hmm. To become a full member, that is a voting member, you must publish a minimum of 2 first-authored papers. Your PhD thesis would certainly suffice as one, since that's peer-reviewed by a committee.
Sure.
If you're working in industry and are restricted in terms of what you can publish, patents would also fill that requirement, 2 patents. A rather new level of membership is the affiliate membership, and Ernie, you're an affiliate member, and I'm pleased about that.
Absolutely.
That's a level of membership that provides not all the benefits of a full member, certainly not the voting rights or the ability to nominate new members for induction, but it does provide a way for science teachers, spouses, members of the public generally to show their support of science and science education by being a part of Sigma Xi at a different level.
I see. Well, it's certainly quite an honor for a scientist or engineer to be inducted or invited to join Sigma Xi as a full member. How many new members are typically inducted annually?
I think it's about 4,000 to 5,000 rather than 60,000 is about what we have currently with active members in this country. The number of living inductees exceeds about 160,000 mm-hmm. people worldwide. The chapter is the base organization that provides the local support for activities that members in a certain area would be interested in sponsoring or hosting or participating in. most of these chapters actually are based at universities, and so most of the members are inducted as university students or graduate students, but also as faculty members. Just recently, in fact, the dean of the College of Design and School of Architecture at NC State, Marvin Malika, was inducted by the North Carolina State chapter. Architects historically have fallen sort of in between the what Phi Beta Kappa sees as being appropriate to their membership and Sigma Xi to its membership, in that they're viewed by the Phi Beta Kappa folks as engineers, or many of them anyway, related more toward engineering, by the people historically in Sigma Xi as people in the arts. In fact, most of us would agree that architecture is indeed the bridge between arts and science and engineering. I wouldn't think many of the architects, certainly not practicing architects, would perhaps qualify for membership as it's presently defined, since most of their work is probably copyrighted rather than patented. But it's wonderful that some architects are getting inducted. It so happens, the reason I mentioned Marvin Malika, not just because he's a local, but it so happens that on Sunday he was elected president of the American Institute of Architects, which is the national organization that sort of like the American Medical Association that virtually all architects are members of. And it's wonderful that Marvin, as an academic, is now one of the very few that's ever been elected national president. And so it's a particular honor that that for us that he's a member of Sigma Xi.
I see. Well, Phil, you've touched on a topic that I definitely wanted to delve into this morning, and that is the interdisciplinary nature of Sigma Xi, which seems to distinguish it from the professional societies that are devoted to individual disciplines, such as the Association of Architects. Is that one of the key elements to the organization's longevity and really robust activities today?
Well, I think that's what brings most of us together as members, is an interest in science generally rather than just in our own fields. Each of us, of course, brings our particular area of interest to bear on the local chapters. I mentioned that they're mostly in universities, but General Motors, for instance, has a chapter. We have industrial chapters around the world. The interest, I believe, that our members find in attending Sigma Xi activities is the ability to chat with people in other fields. Michael DeBakey, the famous heart surgeon, has commented on more than one occasion that his ideas for heart transplants, the technology, even others' artificial hearts, came from a meeting with Sigma Xi colleagues who were engineers. And that, of course, is one of the things we would hope happens quite frequently at gatherings of Sigma Xi members, where there's that cross-fertilization. You get out of your own area of comfort and open your mind to other people's areas of interest.
So get out of the silo for a while.
That's right. Now, we recognize that people have to work in their particular field, that the associations, societies they belong to are those that foster their development in their particular career path, and those are the journals they read primarily. We see American Scientist, which is the publication of Sigma Xi, the main publication, which is now about 95 years old. It used to be, when it started, was a journal, peer-reviewed journal for articles. Now it's evolved into a magazine. It's what we would call as a secondary read. People might read their sort of trade journals, if you will, scientific journals at work, but Sigma Xi's American Scientist magazine, people would read at home at night after dinner.
Sure. And a fine publication it is.
Well, as you know, Ernie, that publication, we try and have balance. Sometimes members get irritated that their particular field hasn't been highlighted in an article on occasion for whatever length of time. But generally, within each issue, you find a panorama of science and engineering topics that are discussed through not only the main feature articles, but also shorter articles and thorough book reviews.
And the thing I've been impressed with in reading the magazine is that for people like myself who are not scientists and do not have a field of specialization, it's written in, you know, lay-friendly terms.
Well, we have a very, very talented group of editors, Ernie, who work for American Scientist. We do a lot of our artwork in-house as well. Fine individuals who help the authors get rid of the jargon or reduce the jargon as much as possible so that people outside their particular field can appreciate what they're trying to say in their feature article, especially. The fact is that it's a magazine similar to Scientific American, as most of your listeners would probably recognize.
Sure.
Just describing the breadth of the topics. It's a little more scientific, I think. Scientific American perhaps could be more easily read by non-scientists, but we try to achieve that same goal with American Scientist.
Right, and it is a good reflection, as we were discussing, of the broad interdisciplinary approach of the whole organization.
That's our goal.
Sure. Well, my guest on Radio In Vivo this morning is Dr. Philip Carter, who is Executive Director of Sigma Xi. And Phil, I wanted to move into the idea of education. I know that one of the cornerstones of Sigma Xi is its emphasis on aiding young researchers and fostering participation in science from young investigators to secondary school children. What types of activities does Sigma Xi sponsor? And in general, are we doing enough to attract and encourage young people to pursue careers in science and engineering?
Well, this is actually something of great interest, has been for a long time, Ernie. The Sigma Xi has an internal program. We've done projects mostly with the National Science Foundation addressing issues associated with science education. They have a whole directorate that funds programs in science education, and many of the recipients of those funds are here among the local universities. The Sigma Xi also has a person who deals directly with these kinds of issues, trying to build bridges between and among institutions, federal and private. The Sloan Foundation has supported some of our studies. The fact is that we need to do more in terms of getting young people into the hard sciences. I think people, non-scientists, I think view their schoolwork for their children as being, well, they should take a general biology course. But we need to go beyond that and expect that of all our high school students anyway, get into chemistry and physics.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how so-called late bloomers discover things that they never thought they'd enjoy or be good at until they actually take a course in these other subjects. Britain right now, and I serve on an advisory council for the University of Bristol, is very concerned about the low proportion of students majoring. These are college or university students now, in the hard sciences. Sigma Xi partnered recently with the National Science Foundation on a 3-day program entitled the Globally Prepared Workforce. And the focus was, in fact, the need for American students to be better educated in the hard sciences, trained in the technologies associated with those sciences and engineering.
Mm-hmm.
In order to compete with what's going on in other countries.
And I understand the organization also provides support to young investigators as well.
Well, that's correct. I think it was 1922 when we first gave our grant Native Research to young scientists, undergraduates and graduate students. The program over time has given out over 30,000 grants. One of the grantees I was with just recently, in fact, she was the first woman to receive one, is the new head of Cambridge University in England, Alison Richard, who was inducted as a student into Sigma Xi and has been a strong supporter ever since. It's nice that, she's just one example of many who have done very well in their scientific careers, often as a result of this grant native research they received as a young person.
Well, I know that that's often for the young investigator, that's a critical time and a time when it's very challenging to get grant funding.
Well, that's exactly right. Our mission, the first part of our mission actually is to enhance the scientific enterprise. And, we have a three-part mission. The second part is to foster integrity in science and engineering research. And then the third part of our mission is to promote the public understanding of science. With regards to the first part of the mission, which is the point of your question, people would say, well, Sigma Xi has been eminently successful in supporting the enhancement of the research enterprise and striving to encourage its development, certainly in this country. But in fact, even though the National Science Foundation was started after the Second World War, the NIH after that, National Institutes of Health that funds so much research here in Chapel Hill, the fact is, as a Western nation, much smaller proportion of the public or domestic gross product in the United States is below most of our Western allies, that of our Western allies.
That's devoted to scientific research.
Scientific research. The National Science Foundation, compared to the National Institutes of Health, is woefully underfunded at a time where we really need to be supporting research in areas of non-medical science and engineering work. Certainly to solve major problems affecting our environment. The global warming issue, in fact, is something that's on everybody's mind right now. The need to develop alternative sources to just burning up petroleum as a source of energy. These provide great opportunities for this country with our huge, well-established scientific enterprise. A research enterprise, but we can't do it without, really committing some resources to it. We've done that locally at Duke University. The center there which has been called the Manhattan Project to address AIDS and develop an AIDS vaccine is very important. We need a Manhattan Project also for alternative sources of energy.
Right, and hopefully we're going to be seeing that in sometime in the near future. It seems eminently obvious that something like that is needed. Phil, I'd like to move on to the second part of the three-pronged mission you talked about. As we're all aware, science seems to be under constant assault these days. And I know that that is a major concern of the membership of Sigma Xi. How does the society work to communicate good scientific information out to the public?
Well, the second part of our mission is more to promote foster integrity in scientific research.
I'm kind of flipping around on you because we'll get into integrity.
Because that's important. I've personally, Ernie, for a 120-year-old society, the mission statement I just described, I believe is as current today as it was over a century ago.
Absolutely.
Perhaps more importance is now placed on the fostering of integrity in research as the public, as well as scientists themselves, researchers themselves.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about that, because that really does feed into the public understanding of science, because the integrity of science is part of what has been under assault.
Well, that's right. There's no question that if the public loses confidence in the accuracy of the published research, that they won't be too keen on supporting it with their tax dollars. scientists, researchers, generally scientists and engineers need to appreciate how important it is to do good research, do research that the public can trust, serve on evaluation committees for the Food and Drug Administration, for the National Institutes of Health, the NSF, et cetera, that people have confidence in is doing its job as oversight committees, et cetera. Without that public support, we're not going to achieve very much. The only a well-developed, civilized nation can really afford to support the kind of research that needs to be done that we've just been talking about.
Sure.
And the worst thing that can happen is to have that support erode. When I was Associate Vice Chancellor for Research at NC State back in the 80s, we recognized the need for this sort of communication. That's what led to the development of a TV program on PBS called Search, which was about this research that mostly the UNC campuses were doing in North Carolina to address real problems in North Carolina. For Sigma Xi, this sort of attitude is one we have not only for this nation and Canada, where most of our members are, but throughout the world. This has to be done. The world gets smaller with each generation. People are educated in many different countries, Americans more than they used to, but not as much as people from Western Europe primarily and Asia have been. This has led to a recognition that we must agree among the different countries on, you know, what it takes to do proper research, what the bases are, the standards are for animal care and use, for instance, a topic of great concern, especially in the United Kingdom, but also in this country, what qualifies as appropriate standards for research reagents, whether biologicals or chemicals. These things are international. That Sigma Xi, through its international membership and through the distinguished members that we do have, really plays a great role in this international debate on what constitutes proper conduct of research.
I see. Well, and what constitutes proper conduct of research goes beyond even some of the things you've been talking about into really the ethical issues involved, and that has certainly been something that's been grabbing a lot of headlines and a lot of conflict of
interest. We actually have a person who in charge of an ethics program based at Sigma Xi Center, a former executive director, a member of the Carter administration, Dr. John Ahern, a member of the National Academy of Engineering, and an adjunct professor at Duke, actually. He heads this program up. There's been a number of publications and ethics guidance for graduate students, discussion of authorship, the sequence of authorship, which is often a point of contention, certainly among young scientists, not understanding fully how these things, how you can address these issues in a civil manner without getting upset with your doctoral advisor and things like that.
Without wars breaking out.
Yes, but we've had on occasion over the last 20 years here, even just in the Triangle, panel discussions where we brought together graduate students, postdocs, researchers at universities, researchers at local research organizations like, well, some time ago, Burroughs Wellcome and now GlaxoSmithKline, where those people participated in panel discussions that have led to publications or videotapes that are available to groups. Mostly Sigma Xi chapters have been the ones to take advantage of that. This is one way we address at Sigma Xi the need to foster and address current issues of ethics in research.
And that's certainly an overwhelmingly important issue, which seems to be becoming more and more important as we, you know, out in the public do see so much evidence of some problems in those areas that it seems like it really does bear constant reemphasis. And I know that some of the materials you've been discussing that Sigma Xi put together were done quite a few years ago. The standards don't change, and I know that those are still proliferating to this day.
No, that's absolutely correct. Just recent headlines about the cloning a human being in Asia and having that turn out to be, you know, just a fraud. Issues with how we do pharmaceutical research and test drugs and things like that. These are issues that have always been around. They always will be, and we just must keep addressing these things as technology brings up new problems for us. Stem cell research being one that certainly this nation debates to a great extent.
Sure. Well, you bring up a perfect opportunity to kind of walk back into the public understanding of science, because there's a perfect example of a scientific topic that has had quite a bit of misunderstanding in the public arena, being stem cell research as one example. You know, I mentioned earlier that science does seem to be under this sense of assault. There's almost a bunker mentality sometimes. And I know that the members of Sigma Psi certainly are concerned about that. So I know that the organization has a whole department called Public Understanding of Science.
You're absolutely correct. And in fact, the editorial in the current issue of American Scientist addresses one of those issues, evolution versus intelligent design, and what's science and what's belief, you know, what's religious belief versus what's experientially acquired knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many other topics like that. It's wonderful to have the National Humanities Center close to us as our neighbors. Frequently we find that, and Jeff Harpin, the new director, has certainly been very proactive in recognizing that he's situated in the Research Triangle Park. That doesn't just mean scientific research, of course, but he's surrounded by scientific and engineering researchers. So he's worked hard, and the whole staff there, to develop programs that maybe have an interest in both the people in the humanities and people in the sciences and in engineering. The programs within our own organization, like the science cafes, this is a recent development that is gaining great popularity here locally, but also around the country, to allow people who aren't members of Sigma Psi, really, to come together with scientists in an unthreatening situation, like a coffee lounge or whatever, to have discussions, have a scientist lead the researcher lead a discussion on a particular topic and have people chime in. It's certainly a growing, it's really growing in popularity, Ernie.
Right, and that's in conjunction with the North Carolina Museum of Natural History.
Well, they've sponsored one, and I certainly support that. I've just been appointed by the governor to the commission on the Natural Science Museum, but it's also been sponsored by organizations in not just Sigma Psi chapters, but other scientific organizations, museums, smaller museums in Durham and elsewhere.
I see.
It's certainly, I think, going to grow in popularity and become more common.
Well, it's certainly a wonderful program, and we certainly want to take the opportunity to promote it here a little bit. We're discussing the science cafes, and the next science cafe is going to be on May 15th, next week, in Cary. It starts at 7 o'clock at the Triangle Grill. And the topic of that one is going to be the ivory-billed woodpecker, with speakers Dr. Gregory Lubart of the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine and Dr. Diane Derasiensky, I believe is the pronunciation, of Bowman Animal Hospital. And
that's actually a husband-wife team.
Right? Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
They're very, very good. I encourage everybody who's able to go and listen to both of them.
It should be a great talk, and certainly a lot of birders in the triangle. Uh-huh. So,
yeah, sure. Greg's actually written a book on it. It's more of a novel, really, but I'm sure he'll talk about the science and the ecology of the woodpecker in this presentation.
Right, and the ivory bill, that's the one that they've been trying to
confirm the existence.
Figure out if it's still around
Arkansas,
or not.
That's right.
And next month, I understand, the Science Cafe, the topic will be about honeybees, and I'm sure included will be discussion of the mysterious collapse of many bee colonies around the country.
Yeah, it's growing in importance, isn't it?
It is indeed. What about some of the other
Well, like this June, we're having a gathering of our honorary members here in the Triangle, not just here, we're having the gathering here in the Triangle, but our honorary members come from all over. Many of them are, in fact, science writers, distinguished science writers. And there's going to be a brown bag lunch open to the public sponsored at Duke on June 22nd as part of this two-day gathering and celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to allow more and I think, improved interaction between people in the research community and those who are not. And we anticipate having a good discussion, certainly by our distinguished science writers from New York Times, other very distinguished publications, and being open to the public. I think that'd be a very popular event. There's
Absolutely.
Also North Carolina, a plan to host here locally the North Carolina Science Blogging Conference, where
right.
people who want to use their blogs to promote issues and promote discussion of issues in science and research and engineering. That's going to be held, we think, in January of 2008.
Right. Well, I was speaking with your associate, Katie, here, and we both attended the initial one back in the winter that was held at UNC, so that's going to be quite an event.
Well, we had a nice event in February. In fact, the Roger Cashmore was a fellow of the Royal Society and head of Brasenose College at Oxford. They'll be celebrating their 500th anniversary next year, and they were founded.
Now that is venerable.
Yeah, I was telling you about NC State being founded in 1887. This was 1508. He was. We were pleased to have him. He's a distinguished physicist who, just before he went to Oxford to take over headship of that college, was the research director at CERN, which is the high energy physics research lab. It's located in Geneva, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
While he was here, we had a nice reception for him following his talk, which was very well attended by both Sigma Xi members and non-members. Many of our events are, in fact, as I've already mentioned, open to the public, to non-members.
Sure.
And Roger, of course, was addressing issues of non-petroleum-based sources of power and energy, which certainly is very current. It was nice to see that Bob McGee, the current chairman of Progress Energy, in the audience at that particular event.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there are so many activities that, as you mentioned, are open to the public, and what a wonderful resource for anyone in the Triangle area or this whole part of the state to come and learn.
No, it's wonderful. We were able to. Speaking now as a North Carolinian, able to recruit Sigma Xi here. They, as I said, founded at Cornell, but for most of the 20th century, they were located at Yale in New Haven.
I see.
There was a committee formed within the society to look for another site. This was back in the mid-80s or so. There were over 100 sites considered, and Research Triangle Park was one of the final three. And the local university, certainly the research universities, developed liaison teams. I was on one back then, never thinking I'd be in my current position.
Indeed.
To help recruit them here, and we were very pleased to be successful. The $6 million budget does have an impact on the local economy. And as you say, the new building is just a beautiful place for meetings and things, that even for non-Sigma Xi events. We have we sponsor, which perhaps is more related to our mission, what's called Techie Tuesdays, get young people in for socializing after work, mostly in Research Triangle organizations. Mm-hmm. We are now making our facilities available for weddings. So after the young people meet at Techie Tuesday, they can get married with a scientific theme on Saturdays.
How cool.
At Sigma Xi. That's a very nice location.
Now, when you start doing funerals, that's going over
right.
The top.
Well, I think with the demographics of our membership, maybe that's not out of the question, Ernie. But certainly the plenty of free parking and all makes an attractive site for people to have meetings and other kinds of get-togethers.
That's true. One of the two times I've been out to your building was for an NIEHS conference a couple of years back.
Yes, NIEHS, it was wonderful we were able to recruit them down here. The National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences is the only National Institute of Health not located in Bethesda, Maryland. So it's nice to have that talent down here, that for our economy, of course, the payroll and all. We were, back in the 80s, this state was very active in going after some scientifically based organizations. We were successful. Certainly local Congressman David Price here from Chapel Hill and others worked very hard to get an expansion of the EPA. We're all proud of the beautiful new building they have across the lake from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. But beyond that, we were talking about the high-energy physics lab at CERN in Geneva. We were, you know, involved, as you may recall, Ernie, in trying to get the superconducting super collider here.
Right, sure.
One of my classmates from college was the lead physicist writing that proposal, but we had a lot of folks from the area universities involved in trying to put it together. We came in second to Texas, as you may remember. In fact, I was involved in that committee, and it always bugged me that Texas beat us out on three of those major things back in the 80s. The other one was Semitech, which was a consortium mostly of private industry research groups that went to Austin, Texas, and then the Food Safety Institute from as part of the USDA actually went to Houston. So when we came in, I think, second on all those things, so I'm pleased that we won the prize with Sigma Xi's relocation. Anyway.
Absolutely. Well, and it seems like such a critical part of the kind of critical mass that has been reached here in the Research Triangle area.
Well, I'd like to see that serve as an enhancement to our efforts on getting more of these national efforts located in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina, as you may have seen the publication last week, we ranked the lowest in per capita return of federal dollars. And it sort of irks me, not being political, but as a taxpayer, to
sure.
see our, my tax money going to Texas instead
right.
of a good proportion coming back to North Carolina. So hopefully Sigma Xi, the fine research and faculty talent we have at universities in this state will allow us to draw more science and engineering facilities, national facilities, to North Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, Phil, I want to move on to the climate change report in just a minute, but before we do that, can't leave the public understanding of science issue with Sigma Xi without mentioning what a great resource Sigma Xi is for the journalism community, of which I am a member.
Yes, of course.
The media resources activity, which puts journalists in direct touch with experts in particular areas, and all the electronic newsletters that come out.
I'm glad you find them helpful.
Absolutely. I read the Science in the News every day that you folks put together. And it's very helpful. And you've got great resources on the website as well.
Thank you. Yeah, those will be even better, Ernie. We've just ported our website to it'll be instead of as it has been served by our publisher, who really wasn't focused. This is the actual printer of Sigma's, of American Scientist magazine, really wasn't focused on web technology and keeping up with it. We've gone to a new provider that'll give us better facilities, online facilities, and I think the people who will log in will find it very, very helpful and very interesting.
Well, that's great. I will be looking forward to that. And, of course, that's not just resources for journalists. It's resources for anyone in
that's
the public
exactly
who's
right.
interested in those areas.
Helpful links to other sites and publications. That's mm-hmm. right.
My guest on Radio In Vivo this morning is Dr. Philip Carter, who is Executive Director of Sigma's Eye. Phil, I wanted to be sure to leave us plenty of time during our hour together this morning to talk about the very significant work Sigma's Eye has been doing on climate change. I understand that 3 years ago, the organization was invited by the United Nations Foundation to convene an international panel of scientists to prepare a report outlining the best measures for mitigating and adapting to global climate change. And that report came out in February and was titled, I loved this title, Confronting Climate Change, Avoiding the Unmanageable and Managing the Unavoidable. Can you give us kind of the executive summary of the executive summary?
Well, yes, sir. I'll tell you that Al Gore is a member of Sigma's Eye. He's was elected honorary member some years ago, but he was not the person pushing this.
It
was actually the United Nations that came to us as asking us to partner with them to put together a scientific expert group.
Which really speaks to Sigma's Eye's integrity in and of itself.
Yes, I believe it does. Thanks for making that observation. The chairs of that were Peter Raven and Rosina Bierbaum. Peter is a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He's head of the horticulture, the gardens in St. Louis. Rosina Bierbaum's head of the Environmental College at the University of Michigan. Rosina, by the way, has just been elected to membership in the National Academy of Arts and Sciences.
I see.
Very competent young woman, and of course, her mentor to a great extent was Peter Raven, a former president of Sigma Xi.
Mm-hmm.
We presented the report. It was different in its focus from the huge 600-page tome that was presented in January.
The IPCC?
That's correct, where they had, it was presented in Europe. And their focus was trying to show the reader that there is good basis for assuming that the global warming that's been occurring, I guess you could say since the last ice age, really.
Right.
But the thing that's gotten everybody's attention is the rate of global temperature increase in recent decades. The focus of that issue, of that report, was addressing the topic of whether this is due to human activity or something else. As I think you're aware from reading just even the newspaper accounts, there's strong evidence that, in fact, very convincing evidence that it's unlikely that it's anything but human activity that's causing, that's impacting our sudden temperature rise, a very
sure.
steep temperature rise.
Mm-hmm.
What that publication didn't address intentionally was what do we do about it, and that's what this one that Sigma's Eye partnered with the United Nations was meant to address. And it does that. It's been criticized that it perhaps wasn't so thorough. Didn't go so far as telling us all the buy Priuses.
I'm not gonna right.
advertise for Toyota here, but unless they can help your station. The fact is, that's the strength of this report, and it's a shorter one. In the current issue of American Scientist, that is the May-June issue, which is available at bookstores locally, even if you're not a member of Sigma Xi and don't receive it in the mail, you can go purchase it. It has in the back an executive summary, as you mentioned. which would, I think, be a fine reference text for people interested in this topic. Mm-hmm. The committee actually got to spend a half hour with the new Secretary General of the United Nations. He was very pleased to receive the report and on time. It was something that was conceived about 3 years ago. So and it was a very thorough international committee that contributed to that report.
Right, and that came out in February, right?
And you can, it's even on our website, available through Sigma's Eye.org website.
Right, the executive summary, yeah, is up there.
Mm-hmm. That can give you a link to the full report if you're so interested.
I see. Well, being that it came out in February, what kind of reaction has there been to the report?
Well, we've had some people that were critical of it. But most, I think, were very approving. It's still going to be a topic that's going to be argued. The report, I think, as did the previous one released in January, is, I think, begging people to consider that the possibility that the minority opinion is the accurate one is perhaps remote enough in its accuracy as to cause us to, whether they're right or wrong, take some action, certainly backing off from increasing, doing whatever we can to reduce emission of greenhouse gases, reduce the burning of carbon sources, coal, trees, the use of and petroleum for that matter too. So it's whether the majority is right or whether it's wrong, I think prudent people would think we should do something rather than just let's wait and see whether the whole thing collapses on top of it.
Right. And of course this report has at least started the process of providing some guidance on, as it says, avoiding the unmanageable and managing the unavoidable.
Well, that's right. One of the common points of criticism was that not enough was said about nuclear energy. Nuclear power is enjoying a renaissance in this country, certainly. The French have been critical of the United States in that France years ago moved in a very definite way toward nuclear power is a major source of their energy, and the United States has certainly lagged behind. I was really, from a researcher's point of view, was distressed when in late 1978, with Three Mile Island, the first thing the governor of New York did was to stop construction of nuclear plants, even while they were, well along. I felt that was a mistake because I was working at the time at the School of Pathology at Oxford in the very laboratory where penicillin was developed, and I felt that if we had stopped doing research on penicillin because the first child that received it, a 12-year-old boy, died, where would we be?
Sure.
And that death was due to toxicity. The researchers determined what the cause was, how to refine the product, et cetera. And I think we need the same sort of focus on research in addressing alternative sources of energy that might not be as attractive as at the current time. That would be nuclear power being one area where we have to worry about disposal of nuclear waste products and that sort of thing.
Sure.
I think that's where researchers, engineers, science and engineering researchers need to be better supported rather than, just shut down construction.
Right, and that comes right back to the integrity and the public's perception of the disciplines that is so critical to have that kind of trust moving forward issues like that.
When I was in college, zero population growth, ZPG was almost a touchstone.
Right.
We hear less about that now. Certainly the countries in the world, India and China, predominantly that were suffering economically because their human population growth wasn't under control and have now done something about it. The ZPG thing has received less less press, I suppose. But that was one of the areas that wasn't really stressed in our report that Sigma Xi has been criticized for. It's clear that if we have more people in the world using more energy, using more products produced on Earth, that clearly would affect, you know, these other issues that we're talking about in terms of global warming.
Absolutely.
And the environment.
Phil, I wanted to kind of bring our conversation this morning to a conclusion with a bit of a personal question. You had a long career in research and administration as well, but
make me feel old, Ernie.
Well, you know, I probably have a year or two on you, actually. You've been in this position as executive director of Sigma Xi since 2006, correct?
Since August, that's correct.
Since last August, so less than a year. How's it going? What has this experience been like for you?
Well, those who know me and are familiar with my work on an international level and also with science education of the general public through my directorship of the biotechnology program at NC State, through the development of an NIH-sponsored program in digestive diseases, which is primarily a collaboration that Don Powell, who was head of gastroenterology at Chapel Hill, and I started back in 1983, which is still funded, I think, through 2009, directed by Bob Sandler here at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Those sorts of experiences, you know, really play to the needs of this position of being executive director of Sigma Xi. I know my friends in engineering probably wish I had more physics, but my son's a physicist and he's a member. I'll defer to the genetics there.
Right.
So, but it's going well. We hope to see a resurgence in the number of our inductees who are actually supporting the organization. It's sort of like an alumni a group in that everybody who graduates from Carolina or Duke or State gets or Central, wherever, gets a diploma, but not everybody contributes back to their alma mater. And in that regard, we're about where most universities are.
I see. Well, Phil, we are out of time for this morning, and it's certainly been a fascinating hour. It's gone by all too quickly. And I want to take the opportunity to thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come in and educate us about Sigma Xi.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ernie. Thanks for having me.
And we've got some great guests lined up in the coming weeks here on Radio In Vivo. You can check the website for the lineup, which is updated regularly as we book new appearances. So please join us again next time for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. If you enjoy the program, we encourage you to make an effort to support the station by volunteering, contributing, or underwriting our programming. See you next time.